Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the fourth quarter of 2024. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of the Economic Planning Unit at the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, and María del Carmen Bonilla, Head of the Public Credit and International Affairs Unit at the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning to everyone. Thanks for connecting to the conference call. With me is María del Carmen. As always, we will be giving some brief remarks about the economy, the budget, and the debt according to the fourth quarter of 2024 report, but we will try to cover more broadly themes regarding to the public finances, and after that we will proceed to the Q&A. So let me just start with some remarks on the global economy and the Mexican economy, and then I will proceed to make some remarks on the public finances. So first, what we saw is a divergence in sector dynamics, growth, of course, inflation, and policy responses shaped by the global economic landscape. The global financial markets mirror these dynamics, with volatility driven by geopolitical tensions, fiscal uncertainty, and monetary policy shifts. For example, the United States GDP for 2024 outperformed expectations, growth at the robust pace of 2.8% compared with 1.5% what the IMF had in October 2023. This is mainly driven by robust domestic demand and increasing labor productivity, which grew by 2% in 2024. That surpassed the 2009-2019 average of 1.5. On the manufacturing sector, it continued to struggle with a 0.3% decline in industrial production in the fourth quarter. Primarily, this was due to supply disruptions coming from strikes, Hurricane Helene and Milton, and electoral uncertainty. In contrast, the service sector has displayed resilience in the ISM, indicating a sustained expansion since July. Now, the Eurozone faced challenges from subdued consumer confidence and persistently high energy prices, reflecting weak GDP growth of 0.7% in 2024. Meanwhile, China hit the target of the 5%, which was helped by strong exports and stimulus measures at the end of the year, although the housing market remains weak and persisting with some disequilibrium. The global disinflationary trend continued in the fourth quarter of 2024, but the process has stalled in some countries, leading to some central banks to move carefully in the easing cycle. Notably, the share of countries meeting their inflation targets dropped from 37 to 33 out of 44 countries between the third and the fourth quarter of 2024, while those returning to the pre-pandemic historical levels average dropped from 28 to 25. For instance, inflation increased by 0.5 percentage points in the United States from September to December, the euro area 0.7 percentage points, Brazil 0.4, and Chile 0.4 percentage points. In the U.S., inflation remains persistent, driven by service sector pressures, particularly housing, which accounted for over 60% of core inflation in December. And as a result, the FOMC paused rate cuts, prompting markets to adjust expectations. Instead of the 100 basis points reduction projected in September, markets now are pricing only 50 basis points cut in 2025. Now, Mexico, in contrast, maintained progress in its deflationary efforts. Annual consumer price index, according to the CPI, inflation declined to zero, up to 4.2%, reaching historical average of from 2011 to 2019. Now, despite ongoing disinflation, Mexico real interest remain elevated at 5.9%, well above historical norms and, of course, the natural rate, reflecting 28 consecutive months of overly restrictive monetary policy. Risk assessment indicate that inflationary pressures relative to growth and other factors affecting output volatility are asymmetric and more tilted to the downside. However, this favorable risk environment is not mirroring the current stance. As a result, the aggressive policy may unnecessarily dampen domestic consumption and investment, thereby constraining economic growth and undermining the inflation momentum. Historically, the exchange rate has acted as a vital buffer against external shock, allowing gradual adjustment without imposing additional distortion on the economy. In an environment of slowing growth and subdued inflation, maintaining flexibility in exchange rate we think is essential to avoid undue pressures on the monetary and fiscal policies. Forcing artificial overvaluation of the peso could lead to imbalances, especially in terms of trade deterioration, or if the U.S. adopts some protectionist measures. Whereas another orderly adjustment enhances export competitiveness and enables businesses to better adapt to shifts in international costs. Financial markets react to expectations of policy shifts under the newly elected U.S. administration, particularly in trade and fiscal policy. Despite the Federal Reserve easing measures of the 10-year Treasury yield climbed 67 basis points within the 3 months of the Fed first cut rate among trade policy concerns and fiscal outlook. This is like a divergence from historical trends when yields typically decline by 9 basis points in similar periods. The U.S. dollar appreciated sharply, with the DXY index rising 7.6% between September and December, reaching its highest level since March 2015. This appreciation was most pronounced against currencies with high sensitive to trade policy and changes in economic policy from the administration, including the Mexican peso and the Canadian dollar, and of course the Chinese yuan. Emerging markets currently volatility peak in October, indicating increased uncertainty ahead of the U.S. election, but is post-election. The Mexican peso saw its largest decline, while the Chinese yuan experienced only a marginal reduction, highlighting the variety of reactions to the evolving policy landscape by the end of the year. Now, the risk, according to 2025, near-term, could deepen regional economic divergence. While the U.S. faces upside risk from potential fiscal expansion, including tax cuts, most economies confront downside risk from policy uncertainty and rising protectionism. So it's hard to assess what would be the outlook, but the newly inaugurated U.S. administration has quickly enacted a series of executive actions. Among the most important that could affect the outlook are about trade, migration, and fiscal policy. These pressures combined with geopolitical tensions and escalating climate-related disruptions add further uncertainty to the global outlook. We have seen a bunch of supply shocks piling on the top of each other from the end of 2023 to 2024. But now potential shift in the U.S. support from Ukraine and Israel could trigger retaliatory actions and escalate tensions globally. But on the other hand, the recent truce between Israel and Hamas could improve commercial transportation routes in the Middle East, thereby easing pressures on supply chains and prices. As we were mentioning all these years, the climate issue, rising temperatures are projected to amplify extreme weather events, further increasing risk to global infrastructure, food security and supply chains. Adverse conditions and impacts observed in 2024 are expected to intensify in 2025. Last year, the world recorded a historic high global temperature of plus 1.3 Celsius degrees above the 20th century average, alongside 377 natural disasters, well above the annual average of 270 recorded between 1980 and 2010. On the top of that, we have the ongoing presence of the La Niña phenomenon in early 2025, which has a 60% chance of exceeding into the second quarter. This could lead to prolonged dry conditions that could strain agricultural production and pressure prices. Additionally, increased hurricane activity may threaten coastal infrastructure, trade routes, and insurance markets, according adding to further volatility to the global economic outlook. So these are basically our main risk assessment for the year. Now, let me give a brief comment on the Mexican economy. So the Mexican economy entered 2024 with many supply shocks that carried from late 2023, which slowed the growth in the first half of the year. According to these shocks, start easing in the economy that rebounded in the third quarter of 2024, though moderated in the fourth quarter due to external shocks. So at the end, several shocks impacted the Mexican economy from the point of view of climate issues, but also from external part in the last part of the year. So Mexico economy grew 1.5% in 2024, slightly below initial expectations. We think that this is mainly due to temporary external and climate-related shocks that weigh on manufacturing and primary activities. However, this performance does not signal a recession, according to our view. Mexico is not entering one in the short term. Three key factors underpin this assessment. That doesn't mean that we don't think that we might have some weakness in the growth or in the acceleration, but in our assessment there are still factors that could potentially support growth. The first one is specific sector weaknesses, and not according to our view or what we have analyzed so far, is not a broad-based slowdown. So more than half of the fourth quarter contraction was driven by primary activities, which declined 8.9% quarter over quarter. This is the biggest drop since 1999. This downturn was linked to climate and supply factors rather than underlying economic weakness. So we have to keep in mind that. Although drought conditions improved in the fourth quarter of 2024, their effects persisted due to the cyclical nature of the crops and the slowdown recovery of the soil moisture. Most of severe droughts occur in the second quarter of 2024, impacting both autumn winning harvest and more significantly the spring-summer planting cycle. As a result, the impact was fully realized in the fourth quarter of 2024 when crops were harvested. Additionally, the livestock sector also faced some disruptions due to screwworm cases, which led to export bans on Mexico cattle to the U.S., particularly affecting key livestock producing states like Chihuahua. And the second factor that we think that this is also affecting or temporary is the external disruption in the manufacturing. So manufacturing is a very important sector that drives exports for Mexico, and practically manufacturing underperformed due to several cases, but in the last quarter, due to the external shocks in October, including Hurricane Helene and Milton, and this strike in Boeing in the aeronautical services. Impact on the U.S. manufacturing in October, particularly the transportation equipment, dropped by 5.4%, which affected Mexico. Manufacturing contracted by 1.8% and transport equipment sector by 4.2%. This is directly linked with the U.S. decline. The decline in transportation equipment I was mentioning, according to our estimate, is 1 percentage point of the manufacturing drop and 25 basis points of the overall economic activity index in October. Now, in November, manufacturing rebounded 0.7%, but not enough to offset the October fall. And the third factor, the quarter also saw a significant decline in refinery activities due to some accidents and lower production for Pemex. Now, despite these temporary pressures, domestic demand kept growing, supported by private consumption. We saw good numbers in terms of the private and investment still in 2024. The labor market still is performing relatively well, unemployment reaching historic lows at 2.7% in December, and labor force participation stood at 59.9%, particularly the female participation has increased. So we think that this is all supportive of growth. It's also supportive to long-term growth, but more importantly, supportive of lower pressures coming to the prices and more production to the economy. Now, in terms of the growth drivers for 2025, we still think that we have a base effect that is positive to 2025 based on the low base effect of 2024, early temporary supply disruptions and elevated foods, which create a lower base could support growth in the first half of 2025. We also think that there's a regional and sectoral consolidation, while mid consolidation is expected in some regions reliant on public infrastructure. Overall, the GDP will benefit from statistics for private investment expansion and continued activity not related specifically to construction and the works, but related to the service sector and other investment that is starting to expand due to the initial investment from the government. The government support in labor market stability will still continue. Increased government transfers and social programs in 2025 will generate, we think, a lower threshold for private consumption. Meanwhile, the labor market will remain relatively well and despite natural deceleration. And finally, we would like to state or to underline that Mexico has a very diverse economy. Following 2 years of investment-led GDP growth, economic expansion in 2025 will be driven by sectors that are now capitalizing on past infrastructure and industrial investment. Of course, private in the northern part of Mexico. In the southern part of Mexico, we have the trains, businesses supports and logistics, and private construction in development poles. The export sector gains between 2018 to 2024, Mexico's share of imports to the U.S. expanded by 2 percentage points. Notably, non-traditional sectors accounted for 38% of this growth, while stronger trade ties with previously underrepresented U.S. states expanded by 50%. So we have gained some diversity in terms of our exports, and probably we will have to rely a little bit more on diversification. Now, let me proceed to give some remarks on the public finances by the end of the year and the main indicators that explained what happened with these variables. First, despite this global and challenging environment, Mexico public finance remained very well and solid in 2024. Fiscal balance were practical line or even better than the targets, and the public debt has maintained a sustainable levels of 51.4% of GDP. And I need to remark that this is basically an effect of the exchange rate depreciation of the year. If we would have kept the same exchange rate as we planned into the package, probably the debt to GDP would be around 49% of GDP. Now, the strong fiscal performance was supported by overachieving a budgetary revenue collection, with total budgetary revenue surpassing the program by 165 billion pesos. Tax revenues reached an all-time high of 14.6% of GDP, which reflecting economic activity, of course, but mainly structural improvements in fiscal oversight, compliance, and tax efficiency. This represents a close to 2 percentage points of increase since 2018 achieved without introducing any taxes or rising the current rate. This is comparable to gains typically achieved by a fiscal reform. So we think that this is a very good result, and probably we will be resourcing more to the efficiency measures in going forward. Tax collection for VAT revenue was robust, exceeding the program by 78 billion pesos, while it posed a 1.6% annual decline. It was fully anticipated due to higher expected refunds, and the result on a final growth rate better than the project. The key driver behind the VAT resilience was a strong domestic consumption, with fueled an 8.1% increase in gross domestic VAT collections. Moreover, import VAT rebounding in the fourth quarter of the first half contraction, posing a 3.3% real increase for the year, 1.4 percentage points of which are explained by the currency depreciation. Meanwhile, income tax fell 26 billion pesos short of projections, primarily due to an usual 9.3% increase in refunds and compensation compared to 2023. Despite this, income tax still posts a real growth of 2.2% with income tax withholding on wages and salaries growing at 6.7% in real terms. So at the end, all these figures compensate to give us a little bit more of revenues that we were expecting in the beginning. Now, looking ahead to 2025, these results give a solid revenue performance on 2025, provide a strong base relative to the one they use at the program to forecast it. For example, tax revenue target of 5.3 trillion pesos. So instead of requiring a 3% real growth in tax revenues, now we need a little bit less than that, something close to 2.6% due to the existing fiscal pressures. And furthermore, new revenue streams are not included in the initial projections, such as taxes on digital services and imports from non-FAT countries, such as China-based e-commerce platforms like Shein, Temu, AliExpress, and other platforms. So those measures are expected to give an additional revenue of 13 billion pesos for the year. And again, this was not put into the budget, and we already have seen some of the revenues coming in January. Also, in the 1st of January, we eliminated the tax exemptions for the imported goods under $50, the so-called minimis. Now they will pay a tax rate of close to 19% for commodities that are up to $2,500. Above that, they will pay the full tariff, but these measures will, we estimate that will generate between 6 to 8 billion pesos of extra revenues. And more importantly, will promote the local economy, because some of these minimis or some of these imports were hurting a lot the local production, especially textiles, footwear, and other manufacturing that are produced in Mexico. Non-tax revenues also contribute to an additional 110 billion pesos for 2024. While the public entities like the IMSS and the CFE deliver a surplus of 51 and 74 billion pesos respectively. So this is a good result for these entities, and it helps us a lot to have the better results in the overall public sector. With additional revenues, we will reinforce our fiscal reliance by allocating an additional 45 billion pesos to the Fiscal Stabilization Fund, bringing this balance to 97 billion by the end of the year. And now with the new transfer for the fiscal year of 2025, the fund is close to 103 billion as of February. Now, this replenishment more than doubled the fund size from previous years, strengthening the capacity to absorb economic shocks without compromising fiscal stability, and ensuring greater flexibility in navigating external uncertainty. These capitalizations were allowed by the changes in the law that we did last year. So at the end, this is a good use of the long time effort that we tried to do with the stabilization fund, and this has added more flexibility to the fiscal outlook framework. On the expenditure side, savings in non-programmable spending were achieved through active debt management operations, and I'm sure Maricarmen could make more remarks about it, which reduced the financial cost by 114 billion pesos compared to the budgeted amount. This is despite restrictive global financial conditions, so this prudent approach helped optimize fiscal resources, freeing up funds for priority programs. Now, public investment reached a historic 3.1% of GDP, surpassing the average of 2.7% historic years, and spending on fiscal investment began to moderate. In October onwards, flagship projects nearly started the completion. Now, as a result, while fiscal investment grew 16.6% in real terms during the first three quarters of the year, it declined by 4.1% year-over-year in the fourth quarter. So this adjustment is part of the broader fiscal consolidation efforts initiated in 2024, reinforcing expenditure discipline ahead of 2025, while maintaining social spending and commitments. While the completion of major projects will naturally reduce construction activity in certain regions, this adjustment is unlikely to affect the overall economy. Now, thanks to robust revenue performance and disciplined expenditure management, Mexico's public finances remain on track through the end of 2024. The public debt stood at 51.4%, as I was mentioning, to GDP, and the public balance at 4.9% of GDP, according to what we set in the measures in the budget. So we practically comply totally with the fiscal rules that were approved in 2024. The public sector borrowing requirements, the broad measure, actually improved relative to what we were expecting in the beginning, of 5.9% to 5.7% of GDP. And we still think that we have like a very solid position, provide a strong foundation. So all these better measures are also contemplating this capitalization to the stabilization fund. So let me close here and pass the microphone to Mari Carmen, that she's going to be making some remarks to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone. I will share the main debt management results during the fourth quarter of 2024. As stated previously in our annual borrowing plan, we are continuously engaging in strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce the refinancing cost, and seek transactions that would help us as well to reduce the refinancing risk. In this context, I will now summarize the main actions contained in the report. Regarding domestic debts, as per the fourth quarter of 2024, the federal government continued with an intensive refinancing effort while also working to update its benchmark bonds. The following transactions were executed. On October 31st, the current administration carried out its first liability management transaction that involved the auction of M-bonos with maturities ranging from 2027 to 2036, alongside the repurchase of M-bonos and UDI bonos maturing between 2025 and 2026. This transaction, for a total of 47 billion, were refinanced. On November 21st, an exchange offer was executed as well. This was accounted for 152 million pesos of CETES, bondes, M-bonos and UDI bonos. That included as well a buyback of these instruments now between 2024 and 2026 period. And we issued the same kind of instruments with maturities between 2026 and 2043. This allows us to increase duration, as you know, to the extent that we maintain the average debt portfolio in the metrics that close to 8 years. And also, we did some other transactions to update benchmarks in the reference score. We auctioned as well on December 4th some M-bonos for a total of 13 billion pesos. And then on December 5th, we concluded the last liability management of 123 billion pesos as well of different market instruments that allow us to issue new maturities between 2026 and 2035. All of these transactions help us to improve the portfolio maturities profile. We also increase the average maturity, as I mentioned previously, and this provided liquidity to the market, to the secondary market specifically for the upcoming years. Now, regarding the foreign debt, we did not execute transactions in international markets. As you know, we have kept foreign debt as a complementary way to address the debt portfolio. But it is worth highlighting that during 2024, as a wrap-up, we did three bond issuance in the dollar and the euro and the Japanese market for an equivalent of $10 billion. Dollars, around $10 billion. So this also shows that we have the capacity either to increase the issuance in the local market vis-a-vis the international market, or depending on how market conditions are, to increase a little bit the international market issuance and not actually filling 100% of the ceiling that the Congress is approving us. So this is a flexible strategy that we are conducting as well. Then, for transparency, just want to mention that what are we doing in the first month of the year. As you know, on January 6th, we issued $8.5 billion in the U.S. markets, securities, for 5, 12, and 30 years, and on January 27, 2.4 billion euros in an 8-year bond and a 12-year bond. This is just for transparency because it's not part of the current report, but we will let you know in the next report the specifics of these transactions. Now, During 2024, in the local markets, and this is very important, the total outstanding refinance was for around 840 billion pesos of internal debt, and for external debt, $894 million were refinanced in 2025 by executing the make-whole call. As per the investor's base, the debt policy strategy has been focusing on broadening the investor's base, diversifying markets and sources of financing. As you know, we have also complementary sources to fund our budget. We keep this issuance basis on the SDG sovereign bond framework. Now, regarding some risk metrics, as per the fourth quarter of 2024, the portfolio maintains sound risk indicators. Currency risk remains low, with only 16.5% of the federal government net debt being denominated in foreign currency and 83.5% in domestic currency. Refinancing risk stands at low levels, since the average maturity of foreign marketable debt is 18.7 years and the average maturity of domestic marketable debt is 7.8 years. As I mentioned previously, we want to be close to 8 years. Additionally, interest rate risk is also limited, given that 77.3% of local debt is long-term and fixed in nominal and real rate, while 100% of external marketable debt is at fixed rate. Now, finally, I will let you know a little bit more about these savings that allow us to, as Rodrigo mentioned, to increase the funding on the stabilization fund. This was a net saving on the public sector borrowing cost in 2024. That was for 1.15 trillion pesos, which is 114 billion pesos lower than the initially budgeted. The internal component accounted for savings of 78 billion pesos, and the external component contributed for 36 billion pesos in savings equivalent. The federal government borrowing cost was 43 billion pesos below the plan amount. Savings of 24 billion pesos came out from lower than expected external costs. And as per internal costs, these were reduced by 19 billion pesos in part of the interest we profit from the treasury in investments, which help us to offset 10 billion pesos shortfall in the internal cost projections. Regarding Pemex borrowing costs were 70 billion pesos lower than anticipated. 59 billion pesos of these savings came from internal costs, while 11 billion pesos came out from savings in external costs. And on CFE borrowing cost, there is no significant variation. It was just only 1 billion pesos lower than expected in external cost. That was basically offset by 1 billion pesos higher than planned in internal cost. So the net effect was zero. I think I stop here, and maybe we can start with the Q&A. Thank you very much.